the Grimmian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's Beyond the Fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grimmian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
And welcome back. Glad to be here with you, Micah Hanks. The mouth of the South here. We're about to dive into a conversation with Soraya Ascath of Where Did the Road Go? But before we do, I have a few brief announcements that we'd like to be making here. By the way, hi to Wish and goodbye to Zadok in the chat room there. Glad to see a few people sticking around. Tomorrow, which for those of you getting the podcast anytime between Tuesday night and Monday morning, or Wednesday morning, wow, traveling back in time here. We are going to be broadcasting the Middle Theory program for this week tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And then sometime after the first of the year, we will probably be switching to a new time. We'll keep you posted about that for all you members of the secret society known as the world's most secret society out there. Glad to see a lot of you up there in the chat room tonight. But we'll be doing that live broadcast tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, so hope to see you all there. And, of course, we will also be doing, I tell you this, I'm looking, and I'm going to be putting this up on the website, so keep your eyes peeled. I'm looking at doing a special year-end bash for the Grimmian Report. I mean, I want to do something really special. And so if you've got ideas that you'd like to send along about what you might like to hear for a year-end roundup, I'm talking about getting some of the very best guests. We're talking about getting some of the very best subjects and some of the most enlightening entertainment, maybe even holiday-themed material to incorporate into this. We'll have time and details in there as well, but maybe some of the folks here in the live chat, they can toss along some information to me about what you would like to hear. Because I'm very sad, and I should make the official announcement here. Ben and Aaron from Mysterious Universe contacted me, and they said that because of the technical difficulties involved with trying to do a simulcast, we did a live simulcast last year, and apparently the guys don't want to try and have to overcome the technical hurdles. I guess not everybody is as technically proficient as the mouth of the South. I think the only thing that's really, truly technically proficient about me is the way and the speed at which my mouth runs, but all the more to them because Ben and Aaron have a fantastic program, and I'd like them to do a good job with or without the mouth of the South. But that said, I think I'm going to have to do something to kick off the new year in style. And heck, maybe we could even get Ben and Aaron to call in. You know, if we don't do a simulcast, maybe they'd be involved in some other way. I'm sure they would. They're great guys and dear friends of the program. And so let's look into that. And if you have information that you'd like to send along about your ideas or what you might like to hear, info@graylinereport.com will get you lined up direct to the bunker with me. Now, that said, moving right along, our guest this hour is a controversial gentleman. He is the host of a radio program and a weekly podcast. He's also a person who is well-versed in such things as the occult and magic. And I knew when I booked him to come on this program that he might be one of the most controversial people I've ever interviewed on this show. I don't know how this is going to go, folks. I don't know how people are going to react to it. I certainly don't know where the road is going to go. But he is the host of the very program of the same name. Soraya Ascath joins us here on the Grimmian Report for the first time. Soraya, welcome, and how are you?
All right. I think you're talking me up a little too much as overly controversial, though.
Oh, you no, sir. You're the most controversial man I've ever known. Well, good to have you here on with us. I want to start right off the bat with your name. And we had, you know, you have some foreknowledge of this. I know that you had mentioned that we would want to talk about that. Let's start with your name, because it's a very unusual name. Soraya Ascath. Am I pronouncing it entirely correctly?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much. Close enough, huh?
Close enough. The name came after a very bizarre experience, but I think I need to go back a little further and get in what led up to it to really make any sense out of it, if that's all right.
Well, let's do it. Take us all the way back.
All right. So I was always interested in the paranormal and the unexplained and stuff like that. And growing up, I always read books on Atlantis and UFOs. But it was just one of many things I was interested in. I had absolutely no interest in magic or the occult or anything like that. And this kind of ties in when the last time you were on my show, we talked about how Fate magazine saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, growing up, I started experiencing something I simply couldn't explain. It initially started with very strange hallucinations and ended up with pain in different areas of my body that no doctor could diagnose, and other just very bizarre things happening. And it wasn't until I picked up an issue of Fate magazine that just mysteriously showed up at my door one day. I had never heard of it, read it cover to cover, loved it, subscribed to it. A few issues later, they had a book on from Llewellyn on Kundalini. Most people have never heard of this. They might have heard of Kundalini yoga. I had never heard of it. But after almost a decade of really horrible problems that were non-diagnosable, I suddenly found out that this is what I was experiencing. And this took me into everything. Now, are you at all familiar with this?
Somewhat, I am, indeed. But now for the listeners who aren't, let's go ahead and dive into it a little.
Well, Kundalini, especially nowadays, is a style of yoga, and it wakes up energy that, and the actual term means a coiled serpent.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that the energy starts at the bottom of your spine and goes straight up your spine to the top of your head, and it's a very spiritual awakening type of an experience. Some people, however, it wakes up on them without any effort. It just wakes up. And when it does that, it can damn near kill you.
In what way? And how would it damn near kill you? I mean, this sounds dangerous.
Well, in some people, it makes them extraordinarily sick. There's a great book by John White, and it's a compilation of different authors, and it's not New Age at all. It goes back to ancient Indian texts and different Hindu writings and stuff talking about what this can do. And in my case, it caused me extraordinary pain. Like, I've never felt pain like that in my life. To this day, I've never felt anything that painful. It feels like someone's stabbing you in the knife, or stabbing you with a burning knife in the spine and just twisting. And when you don't know what it is, and a doctor's telling you there's nothing wrong with you, you're kind of lost. So that issue of Fate magazine showing up, you know, led me in the right direction. I may never have found out about it if it wasn't for Fate.
A bit of synchronicity there, huh?
Yeah, kind of. So what it does is, as it rises, it hits different blocks in your system. And those blocks are things you're not dealing with, and it just burns until you deal with them. If you don't know that's what's going on, you have no way of dealing with it. It's not voluntary in that case. If you're using Kundalini yoga, it's something entirely different, because you're raising it properly, you're doing it in a balanced way. But as a 15-year-old kid, I had no idea what was happening to me.
So you see, these essences literally were just autonomously coming about, is what you're saying?
Yes, very much so. There were times I literally blacked out from the pain. Once I learned what it was, once I did some research, I was able to start doing things to kind of balance it out better and get it to work through these blocks and actually work with it rather than just, fighting it as you would any kind of pain. This is also, are you familiar at all with the laughing churches?
No, I'm not.
There is a phenomena out there that certain Christian churches, one person will start laughing, and they get the Holy Spirit filling them. Mm. And as they touch other people, the laughing spreads to them. That's Kundalini.
Interesting. Now, I have heard of that, actually, now that you mention it. Now that you've described what it is. Yeah, I've heard of this, almost similar in a way to talking in tongues.
Yes, yeah, similar. But the Kundalini energy, whatever, it does a lot of very strange things to you. It can cause various hallucinations. Before the pain, when I just had the mild hallucinations, that was the first thing that tipped me off when I was reading the information on Kundalini, and I was like, this is fascinating. This is exactly what I experienced. They're audio hallucinations, visual hallucinations. You know they're hallucinations because they're things that couldn't possibly be happening to you.
Well, give me an example. I mean, if you can.
Well, I would play trombone when I was a kid, mm-hmm. and I would see smoke coming out of the end of it. Hmm. Now, there's no smoke coming out of it. It's not even something that could possibly happen, but there it was. And, as a 14-year-old kid, that was really scary.
To say the least.
So as I worked with this more and more, it also has a lot of electromagnetic effects. It can make you, and this is something that is in common with UFO abductees, with near-death experiences. You've been talking about this with watches.
I was just about to ask. Yeah, have you had the watch phenomenon happen?
Oh, yeah, the watch phenomena and all kinds of electronics. Huh. And I've given people some really hellacious shocks before, too, when it's been really raised up. I also sometimes pulsate from it, especially when I sleep, apparently.
You know, I'm waiting for you to tell me that you glow in the dark, too, Soraya.
not that I'm aware of. But anyway, the name, if we get to that, one day it started up. It started with pain, and then the pain went away. And it actually shot all the way through my system. And at first it felt fantastic because it was, I think, the first time the Kundalini had actually cleared a bunch of blocks out. The next thing I experienced was the most horrible sense of loss and desolation I've ever felt in my life.
Ah.
And what had happened, I realized later, is as we go, we build up these structures, these assumptions, and we kind of like climb on top of them, and we build more assumptions up. And then we look at the world from that perspective, and that's our view. And when this thing blocked out, when it came through and knocked all these blocks out, it knocked all those assumptions down. And it just left me feeling so empty and lost. And like, you know, when you have that really bad feeling about something and multiply it by 1,000.
Oh, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, I thought I was dying. And I had no idea why or what was happening to me. And afterwards, I suddenly got these streaks of inspiration. All this stuff that never made a sense to me before was suddenly crystal clear, and I started writing it all down, and I was just amazed. And it took me a little while to put this all together. A couple days later, we had gone to see the Scorpions.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're driving home. A friend of mine's driving. His wife's asleep in front of me. My friend's asleep to the left of me in the back seat. And the name Soraya is spoken directly through my head, very loudly, very clearly, in a voice I've come to be very familiar with. And I knew at the time it was my name, even though that made absolutely no sense to me.
Hmm.
You know, my first response was, okay, one of them must have said it. Well, both girls were completely asleep. There was no other sounds in the car. The thing was extraordinarily loud. And I resisted it for quite a long time. I didn't want to use it. It seemed like a ridiculous thing to do. So that's where the name comes from.
Now, you say that you had an actual voice present this name to you. You were presented with this. Now, I presume this maybe would be something that one might liken to being like a spirit guide or something like that, I guess?
Yeah, that's probably the best way of putting it. I don't consider it that, but that's probably the most common understanding.
Well, what would you consider it to be, Soraya?
I don't. That's the thing. I don't consider it to be anything that I can conceive of exactly. Hmm. It's something I've interacted with all my life, but I don't want to put a label on it.
Fair enough. But this is nonetheless something that has been kind of a guiding force for you, I take it.
Very much so. And it's given me very exact information about upcoming things. It has warned me about stuff. And it's a voice that's so perfect that it always makes me think of Carl Jung's, is it an anima or an animus if it's female?
I believe it's the anima.
I think it is the anima. It always makes me think of that because it's always that perfect image of your female counterpart.
So the voice that you hear is female?
Yes.
Hmm. It's funny that you brought up Carl Jung because I, too, was thinking of that. Carl Jung, you probably remember this. He had talked about when he got about to be in his 30s. He said that he'd had all these experiences where he began to have these, he called it a violent confrontation with his subconscious. But he, too, would hear voices and he would have things happen. Now, there's some people who would tell you straight up, if you have this kind of experience, you're out of your mind, you're having a psychopathic break from reality. I don't think that that is always the case by any means. In fact, I mean, I've even studied native cultures that make very clear distinctions between a seer or a shaman who is capable of rendering experiences where these voices are heard and they are able to receive information from other realms, so to speak. They make a clear distinction between these individuals and then people who they would call crazy or insane, people who have an issue. You know, you don't seem like a crazy person to me, Soraya.
And I always doubt everything I experience. Hmm. For better or worse, I don't necessarily believe anything that happens to me right off the bat. I take it apart. I analyze it. I look for any logical conclusion. Of course, that's always one of them. Am I just losing my mind? I thought for a decade I was losing my mind when it was just Kundalini.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, you know, I'm glad to be able to tell you right now that you're not losing your mind. And listen, we've got to run to a break, but stick with us because when we come back, I want to get into talking with you a little bit about how these experiences have shaped, well, that road that you've headed down. I'm also interested in knowing where did the road go, come from. We'll talk about all that and more when we come back here on the Graylian Report. Our guest is Soraya Ozcoth. I'm your host, Micah Hanks, the Mouth of the South, and it is the Graylian Report. We'll be back right after this. Boy, just leave it to me to just destroy it, trying to come back. I was going to attempt to say Archetypal Majesty's Secret Service. Then again, though, I don't know if there's such a thing as a secret service in that line of work. Welcome back to the program. It is the Graylian Report. I'm your host, Micah Hanks, and we're talking with an interesting guy by the name of Soraya Ozcoth right now. He's the host of a podcast and a radio program, and I want to ask him a little bit about that in this next segment. The program, I've been a guest on it numerous times. It's called Where Did the Road Go? And my question to you, Soraya Ozcoth, in relation to your work, where did the road go? What is the meaning of that name? Because obviously, if I'm to take this to mean that there is symbolism behind it, it has something to do with the profundity that you've experienced in your lifetime. What's going on with that name there?
You would think that. It actually doesn't.
Well, I'm wrong.
It came from an event. We were working with a wrestling company doing some promotion, and we were up in Watertown, and we came out of this event and we just wanted to go get something to eat. We didn't know our way around Watertown. It's way up top of New York State. And we kind of looked around and said, hey, the lights are sort of in that direction. Let's go that way. So we started to drive down the road and the road kind of dipped down and suddenly I was on gravel and then lawn. And what came out of my mouth is, where did the road go?
Goodness.
And I've been doing a music show for about 20 years. And when we told someone this story, she said, that should be the name of the memoirs for the music show. And that wasn't something that was going to happen. But when I started doing this, I thought, you know, that's a perfect name for a show about fringe topics, about the paranormal and lost civilizations and stuff like that. Because it's kind of like going where people haven't gone before, where there aren't roads.
Yeah, it's funny because it reminds me a bit of that famous phrase from Back to the Future, where we're going, Marty, we don't need roads.
Exactly.
And to an extent, maybe you don't in this biz. But now, I'll ask you this, too. I've always been fascinated with magic and the occult. I've never been a practitioner, but now you have elucidated to me in some of our conversations, Soraya, that maybe you have been a little more involved in that sort of thing. While I've studied the history of it, Aleister Crowley is a fascinating historical character to me. What is your involvement in magic and the occult?
Well, I started to, you know, open up to some of this stuff, and initially I was very closed off to anything like that. Someone had introduced me into Wicca, and I found it kind of interesting. Loved the idea of something that went back, you know, centuries into ancient times and stuff. And when I started doing some real research, I found out, well, it really didn't. And although there are different types of folk magic, modern Wicca is only a few decades old. You know, it started around the late 40s, early 50s with Gardner and stuff. And that goes back to Aleister Crowley. Crowley's work was the inspiration for a lot of the stuff that ended up in Wicca.
Right.
So I started looking into Crowley, and I liked the fact that Crowley kind of took a more or less scientific approach to magic. He wanted to know why it worked. He didn't want to know, you know, he wasn't worried about the belief systems or anything else. He wanted to kind of cut it down to its basics and understand the mechanisms that caused it to work. And so I started following that a little bit and other, you know, just reading anything I could get my hands on. And I became more or less what's considered to be a chaos magician.
Oh, great.
Because well, I kind of go with whatever works for me. I don't worry about following anything to the letter. I go with what feels correct to me, hence the chaos part. I didn't know there was a term for it. That's how I did things. And eventually I picked up books like there's one called Psychonaut that's very good on the subject. And, you know, it's called chaos magic. So I would just, you know, the symbolism that works for me, I don't, you know, it's not, you have to learn what every little thing means. It's more by feel. And it's not black magic or necessarily even white magic. I mean, it depends what you're doing with it. And for me, it's always been something to clarify things in life and to kind of awaken different ideas.
Interesting. I would like to ask your approach to, I mean, or do you have a feeling toward the jurisdictions of black magic and white magic? Is there such a thing as black or white magic? Do they have the kind of effect that folklore and mythology seem to append to those things? And if so, do you know people who are actually active practitioners of these magical arts?
Well, it all depends on your definition. Crowley considered black magic anything that did not lead you toward knowledge of your true self.
Hmm. Okay.
Which I think is a very good definition. So when you're practicing magic, you do stuff to add to that enlightenment. If you're not doing that, then you're practicing black magic. Now, some people would say anyone who practices black magic is trying to harm others. And that's a reasonable definition as well. I'm not really familiar with people who practice magic other than myself, to be totally honest. I know some of the stuff I've done has worked very, very well. And I've had, I can tell you one of the creepiest experiences I ever had.
Yeah, let's hear it.
And this involves doing a piece of ceremonial magic that was just, I don't even remember what I was doing. It was probably just for, you know, furthering clarification on the future or something to that effect. And I have a big spot of land. And out back, a lot of creepy things have happened. But I have a gigantic barn. And behind this barn, it is absolutely pitch black. So middle of the night, I'm out there doing this ritual. And the last thing I do is I knock this staff on the ground 3 times. Well, as I do this, you can't hear it knocking on the ground because it's grass. And I tap it 3 times on the ground. And from the barn over to the side, in the exact same pattern, I get bang, bang, bang.
Really?
First of all, it's a creepy barn. It kind of looks like the Amityville house. Has that sort of face in the front. So for all places, for that to have knocked from there, chills just went up my spine. And I went, oh, that's good.
I can only imagine.
And I had to walk past it to get back to the house.
Have you ever had continuing instances of strange things that have seemed to emanate from that area of your property?
from the area I was actually in. Yes, not the barn. That's the only thing that ever happened to the barn. But that back area has something very odd with it, and I don't know if it's an earth energy type of thing or what.
You're in. Let's see. Are you near Rochester, New York? Is that correct?
About an hour and a half from Rochester.
Okay, I got you. Because, you know, I was just going to say that down south where I am, you know, people, when they go out behind the barn to do things, it's usually a little different from what you're describing. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
That's true.
Yeah, it's a little different culture down here where I am in Appalachia. But anyhow, well, you know, I mean, now you've utilized these magical processes. Where, again, you know, have you drawn your knowledge of magical arts? I mean, reading in books? Have you been taught by someone? Have you been instructed otherwise? I mean, I'm interested in this because it seems to me what you're describing to be a continuation of ritual practices that people have carried out for centuries. The question is, where does it all come from? A quick example, you know, last week on this program, and I got a lot of email from people I hadn't had time to get to on the program tonight, but it has to do with this discussion about the Holy Grail that I brought up. And one of my listeners had even pointed out that despite the fact that there's not really a direct reference to it in Eastern culture, the tea drinking ceremony seems to be very similar to the idea of the Grail. The Grail, for me, though, isn't necessarily the cup that, you know, Christ had at the Last Supper, the cup that, you know, Arthur, you know, bound his kingdom together with, you know, and drew its power from. To me, the search for that Grail is something representative of a deeper symbolic something that is within each of us. And it seems that magic and ritual is the pursuit of that deeper, whatever that is, that any of us could access, but it seems to be something from within. So what led you to this path, and how did you learn? Where do you draw your actual knowledge of the magical ritual, for instance? Where does that come from?
Well, initially it came from people like Aleister Crowley and other stuff I would read. I read a lot of Kenneth Grant stuff. Grant gets a little bit weird when he gets into like connecting everything into Lovecraft, but it always fascinated me. But I also picked up stuff from dreams. I will have, you know, very profound lucid dreams where I'm taught how to do things, and then I do them and they work.
That's interesting. You know, speaking of H.P. Lovecraft also talked about dreams. You know, I know you to be a person who's very interested in Lovecraft, and we've talked about that a bit in the past. So when it comes to H.P. Lovecraft, I mean, do you think that he was in touch with something similar maybe to some of your own experiences, i.e. that there was something actually dictating some of this to him? People have talked about that.
Well, I wonder if unconsciously he was connected to something, if he was picking up something, you know, deeper down inside of himself that he just never fully acknowledged.
I've even heard and this is really speculative, but there have been people who have, as a matter of fact, I don't really put anything into this, but I'll state it just for the sake of interest. There have been people who have said that they thought that Lovecraft had possibly been an alien abductee because some of the things that he described were so similar to modern alleged encounters with alien beings. Now, what's interesting is digging into Carl Jung's writing, he talked about some of his patients having similar experiences. When it comes to the discussion of bedtime encounters, sleep paralysis, and things like that, have you had those experiences as well, Soraya?
Not so much the sleep paralysis or anything like that. I have had a few UFO encounters.
Really?
None of them have amounted to any kind of abduction or interaction. Some of them have been, like I had one about a month ago, actually. That was very strange. I saw a massive UFO about 13 years ago now, beginning of 2000. And, you know, but those events didn't have any profound effect on me. I mean, they were fascinating, but they weren't as deep as some of these other things that I've encountered. When I started practicing magic and actually getting results and actually communicating with things, one of the things I had also started reading Whitley Strieber's Communion and Transformation. Mm-hmm. And at some point I realized what he's describing is the same stuff I'm experiencing, but without the alien mask to it.
How interesting.
Huh. And I didn't know anyone else made that connection. As far as I know, no one has made that connection as far as the occult goes. But then I read Jacques Vallée's Dimensions and saw that he took that mask off, too, and connected it to the fairy faith and angels, demons, and so on. And I went, okay, so it's not my imagination. This very well could be the same phenomena, but without the alien face to it.
I often, Soraya, think that the interpretation of alien abduction as being something that is, A, and we've talked about this again, but, you know, for the benefit of the listeners, you've also probably heard me talk about this. For the record, I want to make this you know, I want to tie this all together. The idea that alien encounters, as we refer to them, are necessarily something that is inextricably linked to UFOs is not an idea I'm a proponent of. Now, a lot of people would think, oh, this is hogwash, all this alien stuff and all this junk about UFOs. Clearly, we have to acknowledge that there are technologically controlled objects that are seen in the sky that in various instances cannot be explained. I wonder if they are truly extraterrestrial. By the same token, I wonder if these experiences, after finding the parallels in magical literature, after finding the parallels in the writings of Carl Jung, and seeing the similarities between these things and what popular writers on the abduction subject, including Bud Hopkins and Whitley Strieber, seeing all these parallels, I think even someone like Strieber, with the depth of knowledge that he has, he probably would recognize those parallels, and he would probably agree that there seems to be something more going on here than a physical interaction with an alien entity or with an alien presence. I mean, do you think that this is, for instance, when you have experiences that you would liken to things that Strieber had gone through in his lifetime and wrote about in his books, do you feel that it is truly a physical phenomenon that's occurring, or is there something that transcends the physical and something that is maybe something apart from the physical but nonetheless real?
Oh, I definitely think it's apart from the physical but definitely real. I think it interacts with you on such a subjective level, however, that you can't separate it from that. It may have a physical effect that may exist outside of you, but part of it only exists because it's interacting with you.
I see. I have to ask you about this. There's a researcher named Daniel Boudillion who has talked about this, and I've seen others bring it up, too, and it's become more and more popular in books dealing with ufology because I think more and more UFO writers are running out of material to rip off. The question I wanted to ask you about is the apparent presence that Crowley often referenced. Lam. Some say lamb, but and I may have talked with you about this, I think it's lam because he said that it was taken from the same prefix of the Tibetan word, the way or the path, lama. And so I think he would have probably said lam rather than lamb. But that little entity, if you've seen the image, he looks a little like an alien gray. Do you think there's a connection between the two, like some ufologists have asserted?
I've heard that. That actually started with Kenneth Grant. And Crowley himself said that lam was a self-portrait.
A self-portrait?
Yes, it was his in an ideal state. Now, it may have, you know, been from connection with something else, or it could have just been the way Crowley thought of himself.
That's an interesting.
But Kenneth Grant, as far as I know, was the first one to suggest that it may have a connection to alien grays.
Now, Kenneth Grant was the director who had done the film Lucifer Rising and.
No. I know who you're talking about. Name is escaping me right now. Kenneth Grant was an occult writer. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you look online for any of his books, you're lucky if you can find any of them for under $100.
Really?
Yeah. And he, like I said, he gets way out there. He starts connecting everything into Lovecraft and different, making connections between different magical systems, even, you know, magical systems that aren't like Lovecraft stuff. Because Lovecraft didn't create a magical system, but he set up an entire dark side of the Tree of Life populated by Lovecraftian entities.
He certainly created a mythos, if nothing else.
Lovecraft, yes, absolutely. But he didn't create a belief system. He never tried to sell it as a belief system. I often wonder if Lovecraft's stuff, if we get, you know, 200, 300 years from now, will Lovecraft's stuff become a religion because people will forget it was a fiction?
I think sometimes that the ancient epics that we read and the ancient religious texts that we maintain today, and I'm sure that's the exact parallel that you're making, probably in a lot of instances what we read would be the Lovecraft writings of that day. And yet we look at it and this becomes the very essence for ancient aliens.
Yeah, well, that's very possible. Someone in the chat had just asked about results from doing different magical things. It kind of depends what I was trying to do. Usually I was looking for information, and if I got that information, well, then what I was doing was successful, and I would count that as a result. I've also had a habit of asking the universe for things. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, but it feels like it's the same type of connection. The problem is sometimes you got to be very careful about what you ask for. Mm-hmm. For example, there was a few years back I had asked, I basically just asked the universe, I need about $2,000. It would really help me catch up on some bills and take care of stuff. A couple days later, I hit a deer. Well, the deer made every effort to get in front of me, stuck its head out, took out my headlight, knocked me off the road down a ravine. Going down this ravine, I was doing about 60 miles an hour. I was sure I was dead. And I just looked at this row of trees coming up, and I said, well, that's it. And I went through the row of trees without a scratch. Then there was a bigger row of trees. And I said, okay, well, this is it. Car stopped like it landed on a pillow. I get out. I ended up in a swamp. When I looked at where the car hit among the trees, now I had no control over the car. The car hit the only spot in the trees where there were no trees. It was the exact spacing of the car. There was a car butted up on the right side, or a tree butted up on the right side and left side of the car. And I was fine. Tow truck almost couldn't get it out of the ravine. Turned out it had about $30 worth of damage on it. But the insurance company decided to total it, which I initially argued until the guy said, well, look, we're just going to give you $2,000 and you can keep the car.
That's a win-win, isn't it?
But, you know, I looked at it and said, so thanks for the $2,000, universe, but next time let's not throw me into a ravine.
I'd rather not have whiplash along with the cash.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I was fine, but it was, you know, not the way I would have wanted to get it.
Yeah, well, I've heard this old expression, and I'm sure you're familiar with it as well. If you'd like to make God laugh, tell him your plans for the future.
True.
Yeah,
true.
He may smash you into a tree as well.
I've had a lot of things like that happen where I've just flat out asked for something. I know how to make that connection, and it's the same type of connection when you do a magical ritual. It's almost like a state of mind. When you hear people talk of the law of attraction, are you familiar with that?
Absolutely, yeah.
A lot of that actually comes from the Seth material and Jane Roberts, but it connects in with magic as well. And if consciousness forms reality rather than the other way around, it makes a lot of sense. And what a magical ritual is doing is it's affecting your unconscious mind. Crowley always warned of a lust for result. And he would say, if you do a magical ritual and then you just kind of sit there waiting for something to happen, it's never going to happen. You do a ritual and then you put it out of mind and you forget it. And that's when you'll get an effect from it. Seth basically said the same thing in Jane Roberts' work, saying that, you know, you affect reality in your unconscious mind, not your conscious mind. So if it's in your conscious mind, it's not going to that level that affects reality. And, you know, that is kind of the premise upon which magic works, is that you're affecting reality on a very deep level, and that you're altering your unconscious with symbols and, you know, doing things to kind of shock your system or put it in a certain state. And then you got to leave it behind and get out of that state so it can actually have an effect.
You know, it's well worded the way that you articulate that, by the way. That's very interesting. What would you – okay, I have to ask. Maybe this is kind of dovetailing onto the end of that last statement, but what would you – if someone were to come to you and say, I would like, Soraya, for you to give me advice about how I might be able to improve my life. And obviously the implication here is that this person proposes that they want to improve their life via magic. Some people, even in this listening audience, would probably – say that that's not something you should do. It's bad. It's evil. Is it something that someone can do? Do you think a person can utilize magic to improve their life? Or are there truly dangers that need to be adhered to? Is this something that people, if they don't know what they're doing, shouldn't be messing with?
That's a hard question. I've had some very experiences that I would say initially were bad. But when I look back on them, I realize that they weren't bad at all. They seemed bad at the time, but they actually propelled me forward quite a bit. And that's like with anything in life. We look at bad experiences when we're going through them and we think, oh, this is awful. But when we get to the other side, we might say, oh, well, I'm glad that happened, even though it sucked while it was happening. I think magic, kind of like meditation and such like that, can always help you with your life if you pursue it with a genuine interest. If you're not, you know, if you're going in it to try and hurt someone, what was it that Crowley said? Crowley said, it doesn't matter why someone gets involved in the practice of magic, because by the time they are effective, by the time that person who wants to kill someone actually has the power to kill someone, they're going to know better than to do it.
I wish we could say the same for all the idiots out there who claim people's lives. Maybe in that context, magic is something that could be viewed, however you choose to view it, as something that really at its heart, if done properly, involves self-improvement. And a person who improves and who seeks, furthermore, to improve upon themselves would never misuse a power like that. There's a kind of a sublime element to it, I suppose. Soraya, my last question for you, before I give you some time to talk about what you're doing, where people can find you online. Aleister Crowley, does he have a bad rap? Was he really the most wicked man that ever existed, or did he just get a bad rap?
Oh, he clearly got a bad rap, but he also encouraged it. He had a fantastic sense of humor, and the fact that he viewed the people around him as too ignorant to understand what he was doing, he just played off of it and had fun with it. It seems like near the end of his life he might have regretted it a little bit, but he wasn't a bad guy by any stretch of the imagination. He was actually a very, very, very smart. He was very brilliant. He was a master mountain climber. He did just some astounding things in his life, and it's... anyone who's interested in him really needs to read his autobiography, because it's eye-opening. He is so far ahead of his time, which is why he was so bedeviled back then. He was openly bisexual at the turn of the century, when that was totally unacceptable, and I believe even illegal in England, where he was. He was just a very unique individual.
He certainly was. I believe that book is the autohagiography is what he calls it, which I was interested with that title and wanted to know exactly what it meant. And an autohagiography would actually be an autobiography that a saint pens about themselves. And so it's funny that he utilized that term, obviously, both, I think, in reverence to himself and perhaps also as a final little wink for those who would come along and stumble onto that book. Fascinating guy, whether you love him or hate him, that Aleister Crowley, and it's been great talking with you about him tonight. Soraya, where do people find out about you? You've got a podcast and a radio show, so where do people find you online and learn more about what you do?
Well, as far as Where Did the Road Go, it's wheredidtheroadgo.com. We're on once a week. You've been on there four or five times now, I think. You've been on twice on the main show, and we do a midweek podcast with you once a month or so.
So I'm in the five-timers club. Yes.
At least. I don't remember exactly how many times you've been on. And we're on Deprogrammed Radio, which is you can get to it off wheredidtheroadgo.com. And a guy named John runs that out of Spain, and it's a fantastic little radio station where you can get a whole bunch of other programming as well. And we're on Dark Matter Radio, which is off Art Bell's site. And we're almost up to a year worth of shows. We started at the end of January. You can also find some other stuff on the site. I have a whole bunch of blog entries of stuff I've written. I am working on a book covering all my different experiences, which we've gotten to very, very little of in this time.
There's a book
up there I made as well.
We'll certainly have to have you back so that we can get into some more of that. Although, you know, I think you're beyond the point of being able to get rid of me as it is, so...
Someone die on a mountain with Crowley, someone asks in the chat room, and I believe there might have been a mountain climbing accident at some point.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that, but I did know he was a mountain climber. Are you, by the way, are you a mountain climber as well?
No, not even slightly.
No. I enjoy mountain climbing. I'm just not the kind of guy who goes rappelling off a 400-foot drop. So, ladies and gentlemen, Soraya Azcath, yet again, sir, a fascinating discussion. We're going to have you back and spend some more time digging into your strange life. And, of course, as always, keep us up to date on what's going on with you, and I'm sure I'll catch you again here sometime soon, my friend.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Micah.
It's been my pleasure. And again, hope to have you back sometime. You have a wonderful holiday season. Whatever it is you celebrate in the realm of a chaos magician, I hope it's good for you, okay?
Thanks.
Take care, my friend. That is Soraya Azcath and his podcast and radio program, Where Did the Road Go? Fascinating stuff. And, of course, it's always interesting to talk about the most vile and wicked man who ever was known to exist, although I've debated in my own mind whether exactly Aleister really was as bad as he was made out to be. Certainly controversial. I don't know. Do you think that Soraya was as controversial as Aleister Crowley, or even as controversial as I made him out to be? All-around good guy. Hard for him to be too controversial, huh? We'll wrap things up when we come back here on the Graylian Report. Broadcasting from the dark heart of Appalachia, I am Micah Hanks, and this is the Graylian Report on a particularly creepy evening where we resolve matters at hand here in the bunker. It's just been creepy here in the bunker. Maybe it had something to do with having Soraya on the program, but I'll tell you this. I happen to know him pretty well, and he's a very big-hearted guy. One of our listeners just sent me a text message via the bunker text, and he says of Mr. Azkath, "That guy you had on might truly be a wizard." I think so, too, probably. Wrapping things up, I thought I'd end on a creepy note, since I was talking about how creepy things have been in the bunker tonight. You ever hear that old expression, out of the mouths of babes, though the things that kids say, you know? You hear that expression in similar renditions of that. And I've got a friend whose young boy had once told his parents that there was a creepy man that would hang around out the back window in the back of their house. And so I had found this story particularly unsettling. And so I'd gone to the boy and talked to him one time. And, when I went over to visit, I'd said, "So how you been doing?" You know, I tried not to lead the discussion, but, I got him to talk about this individual. I was a little concerned, I think, as anyone might have been, that, is there somebody looking in the windows at night? And as he described this guy, it was funny because, he was obviously describing something he had maybe seen on television or in a film. But from time to time, kids do say kind of creepy things. And on a recent Reddit page, there had been a list of creepy things that kids say. It's one of those, but this has to do with the disturbing things that kids have said specifically when talking about their imaginary friends. Well, we've got a couple of minutes, so I'm going to go through a couple of these. One was, my son from the age of 3 always tells me that there was a creeper man who lived in my mom and dad's bedroom. Now, he brings it up after he visits them. I made the mistake once of asking what the creeper man looks like. My son said, "Oh, he doesn't have a face." Another one, when my daughter was 3, she had an imaginary friend named Kelly who lived in her closet. Now, Kelly sat in a little rocking chair while she slept and played with her, etc. Typical imaginary friend. Now, anyway, fast forward 2 years later. The wife and I are watching the new Amityville horror film, the one with Ryan Reynolds. And our daughter walks out right when the dead girl goes all black-eyed. Far from being disturbed, she says, "That looks like Kelly." "Kelly who?" we said. "You know, the dead girl that used to live in my closet." There's another one. A parent of one of my students told us in a meeting that she was concerned because her son, who was 7 years old at the time, talked about an invisible ghost who would walk and talk to him and would play with him in his room. Now, he said that the ghost was called the Captain and was an old white guy with a beard. The kid would tell his mom that the Captain told him when he grows up his job will be to kill people. And the Captain would tell him who needed to be killed. Gosh. But apparently the Captain tells him he doesn't have a choice and that he'll get used to killing people after a while. This next one reads, when my boy was 4, his imaginary friend would sit in the corner of the room. When you switched off the lights and the light... Let's see, when you switched off the light of red glowing eyes would apparently light up the room. Okay, interesting. It's kind of strange when some of these people who post these things can't really write very well themselves. My little brother's imaginary friend Roger lived under our coffee table. Roger had a wife and 9 kids. Roger and his family lived peacefully alongside us for 3 years. One day my little brother announced that Roger wouldn't be around anymore since he shot and killed him with his whole family. I don't know if he remembers any of this, but his genuine lack of remorse was very disturbing. This is the kid who apparently shot and killed Roger the ghost, or imaginary friend, rather. My daughter used to tell me about a man who came into her room every night and put the sign of the cross on her forehead. I thought it was just a dream, and then my mother-in-law sent me some family photos. My daughter looked right at the picture of my husband's father, who had been dead for 16 years, and said, "That's the man who comes into my room at night." My husband later told me his father would always do the sign of the cross on his forehead when he was young. This will be the last one for the evening. When my older daughter was 2 or 3, she used to have a couple of imaginary friends. She called them Dodo and Dee Dee. They were typical imaginary friends. She would talk to them and play with them and tell me about their lives. Well, then one day, when she was about 3, she was talking on her little play phone. And then I walked into the room, and she hung up on her phone and said to me, with a completely flat voice and deadpan expression, she looks at me and she says, "Dad, the evil is coming. The evil is coming." Well, it scared the hell out of me. She seriously had an imaginary friend named the Evil. Turns out the Evil was actually a pretty nice friend. She just had an unfortunate name. The Evil? Are you kidding me? Out of the mouths of babes indeed. Now, have you ever experienced this yourself? If any of you in the Graylian listening audience have ever had strange things that your kids have told you, whether it be about an imaginary friend or anything else, I'd be interested in hearing about it. You can email me directly, info@graylianreport.com. That's GRAILIENreport.com. The home on the web of our program. And until next time, my friends, as always, I bid you adieu on behalf of Micah Hanks himself, sitting here talking to the microphone, as well as Tyler Pittman, Caleb Hanks, Matthew Oakley, Dick Oakley, and John Anderson. Have a fantastic holiday season. Stay tuned. We're going to have some updates about what we're going to do for our year-end roundup. It's going to be a good time no matter what we do. Stay strange, my friends. I'm the Mouth of the South, and we'll talk to you next time.
Been listening to the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. Any rebroadcast or duplication of this program or program content without express written permission is strictly prohibited. The Graylian Report, in direct cooperation with the internet website GraylianReport.com.